We are back. Thank you for joining us. Great to have you here. I'm Henrik, and we have a continuation with Daniel Friberg today, a part two, you could say. We did one a few weeks ago. Please tune into that. If you missed it, you can stream or download at redicecreations.com, redicecreations.net, or of course, if you're a subscriber, at redicemembers.com. You can also catch all our free shows. That usually means the first hour, but sometimes both, at our SoundCloud page. We are also on Stitcher, TuneIn, and of course you can add the feed to iTunes if you prefer to hear it that way. Well, Daniel is one of the founders of Arctos, an alt-right publisher providing a lot of good literature that serves as an ideological foundation for the new rising tide of the real right opposition to the liberal madness, the SJW's religion, and the progressive nightmare that is destroying the Western world and the European civilization that now also is backed by the transnational corporations and the bankers. He's also behind the recently launched RightOn.net, which is an online outlet in English for the same rising sentiments. We'll speak a bit about the English edition of The Real Right Returns today, his latest book, subtitled A Handbook for the True Opposition. We'll also go into feminism, gender roles, the difference between the sexes, and low birth rates. Very important stuff. And in the second hour, we'll speak more about Russia's entry into Syria and the reaction by the Zio-infested, APAC-driven foreign policy of NATO and the American Empire, backed by most of our European misleaders. We'll also talk about some of the latest developments in Sweden, some interesting stuff coming up on that, but that's later. We'll start at the beginning. Welcome back, Daniel. It's good to have you back so soon again. We had a great show just a few weeks ago, so it's nice to have you back, and it's nice to speak with you again.
Likewise, I'm happy to be back.
Well, thank you. Well, we since we spoke last time, of course, the English edition of The Real Right Returns has been released, and I wanted to bring you back to speak some more about the book and, of course, some of the other things that we didn't get a chance to talk about last time. There's just so much going on right now, both in Europe and also in Sweden, of course, that demands, I think, some further analysis. But let's begin to talk a bit more about the book. I mean, I know you've been promoting it heavily in the last few days. And of course, later we can talk a bit more about one of the chapters specifically on gender differences and the difference between the sexes that we didn't get a chance to speak about last time. But tell us a bit more about the English edition. I mean, it's really good to have something that really begins, I think, to define something which is on the rise within all of the Western world, really, but within Europe and within America, of describing a political movement that I think a lot of people for some time have been, you know, struggling to define in such a way. But I think that this English edition will do a good job at that, of kind of pinning down some of the ideologies, basically, Daniel.
Yeah. Yes. Of course. And that is the primary purpose of the book, and the reason I wrote the book is because I, as I mentioned in the previous program, there is a huge amount of people coming around to our way of thinking, and they're looking for guidance. They're looking for ideological guidance, basically, because their first reaction is that something is very wrong with today's society. What they react to, firstly, is most often the horrible situation with multiculturalism and immigration, and they need more knowledge than that to be an to be part of an effective opposition, and that is what I'm trying to provide for them, like a good easily understood introduction to the basics of our ideas, and that is also why the ideological points in the book, for example, are very general. I mean, they are basically common sense that pretty much any sane person on the right would be able to agree on. That's the main purpose of the book, to provide a good introduction into our way of thinking, and to be a good starter book to get people thinking, and then a good starting point for further research, because we have a very rich literature now available in English, and especially for further education in various aspects of our ideology. But what we have been lacking so far is some pretty accessible introduction, and that is the void I'm trying to fill with this title.
Well, I think the time is right for this as well now. I mean, many people, I think, instinctively know that something is horribly wrong. They just don't know maybe that their opinions are part of the new right or the real right yet. I think most people have been obviously scared away by the propaganda of the left-wing mainstream media. But the fact is that the left has failed us, and it's utterly ruining us, and people, I think, need to know that there is a direction to turn, and there are people that offer solutions to some of this, which is not just part, obviously, of the old guard of the right, which is, as we spoke about last time a bit, but obviously it's failed us in the same way. So it's definitely time for something new.
Absolutely. I mean, if we're talking about the mainstream right, it's not even right wing. It's a part of the left. You could call it like the right faction of the cultural Marxist left, basically, because they subscribe to all the fundamental ideas of cultural Marxism, like multiculturalism, feminism, gender equality, gay rights. Well, you name it. The whole cultural Marxist package is included in pretty much every mainstream party, regardless if they call themselves left wing or right wing. If you at least in the Western world, and we need something new. We need something that is real, and we need something because we don't need to invent the wheel all over again. So we can steal some of the good ideas of the old right, I mean the really old real right from 100 years ago, and just adapt them to our current situation and kind of repackage them in an appealing way.
Exactly. Well, I mean, the subtitle is A Handbook for the True Opposition, and I think that's something that a lot of people will be also attracted to, because this is where the rebellious spirit lies. This is where the true counterculture is at this stage of going against the grain. And I think that's a big aspect that we can utilize. As I said, I think most people instinctively know that something is horribly, horribly wrong. And I think we're seeing kind of the turning of the wave right now. We're seeing that murmurs, if you will, a little bit here and there, that people are beginning to turn against the political correctness and everything that has painted us into this corner that we're in right now. But people are getting more bold, they're getting more outspoken, and it's very refreshing to see this. So I think this is a good part of that turning the tide, if you will, Daniel.
Exactly. We find ourselves at a very important point in history, a crucial point where as you put it, the turn of the tide has come, and the left is totally intellectually bankrupt. They basically lost the war of ideas. The only thing that they have left is their diminishing control over the mainstream media, and they are dying out, and they will soon be a sad parenthesis in European history. But we have our ideas are obviously superior. What we need is to bring them out there, make them accessible to people, to the growing number of people who maybe have been sensing for some time that something is wrong, but now they are beginning to sense something even more important, a sense of urgency, because things are deteriorating at an increasing speed, and the result is that many people who have been sitting on the fence and kind of hoping that someone else will solve the problem for everyone, they're kind of realizing that, well, that will probably not happen. Maybe I should join as well and try to make a difference.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right. People have to understand that no one else is going to fix this for us. We need every person that we can get, and every person need to wake up and realize that you know, no one's going to come along and fix this for us. But that's what's making this such a kind of an adventure, really, and a task, a monumental task, but something which we can be part of as well. It's just not, it isn't just a political party or a political movement. It's really a way of life, and to turn yourself into something different, to be more than you have been before, and to try harder, and to become something which is greater, right? So it's really a lifestyle, really, right?
Absolutely, and that is exactly the sentiment we need to promote, because many people, especially people just waking up to these realizations of the problems of society, they tend to see this as something horrible, something depressing, something just plain bad, which in a way, of course, it is. But they need to switch attitude and start viewing this as an adventure, as a privilege. It's actually a great privilege for us to be able to play an important part in European history, which we simply wouldn't have been able to do if we were born 20 years earlier, because there wasn't really much to do at that time. But now we find ourselves in a very different situation, a very volatile situation, a time, an era of great adventures and great challenges, and this is a huge privilege for us. It's an opportunity for heroism. It's an opportunity to make a difference, and we should embrace this opportunity and be happy about it.
Mm, oh yeah, definitely. Well, let's just talk a bit more about how the English edition differs from the Swedish one. Did you have to alter some things to kind of make it fit the English speaking audience, or is Sweden really like a good boilerplate, a template for what is happening in the rest of the West?
Yeah, actually, but both the statements are completely true, because Sweden is, as I've been saying many times before, it's basically a cultural Marxist test lab, where the cultural Marxist kind of introduce the new crazy ideas and test them out, see if they fly. If they do, they implement the rest of the Western world. So Sweden is many things that apply to Sweden is equally applicable to the rest of the Western world. So I didn't have to adapt the book that much, but of course I did some polishing. I did some adaptations. I removed some very very specific things that were specific to Sweden, and made them more generally applicable for an international audience. And I improved the structure of the chapters a little bit as well. So now there's a clearer division between theory and practice, because the first half of the book is basically theory and the second half is mostly practice, which I think is a more logical division. And the final thing that is new for the English edition is that we have a brand new foreword by the editor, my friend and colleague John Morgan from Arctos, wrote a very good foreword, which brings some additional value to the English edition, I think.
Very good. Yeah, definitely it does. Now, I mean, it's a great outline. I think it's a good way for a lot of people that are also not only seasoned but are new into this, to kind of put some words to the thoughts and the sentiments that we that most of us feel in these times in terms of what is wrong. And one of the things which is a major problem for us in Europe and the West overall, Europeans, is what you bring up in chapter 5. I thought we could spend some time speaking about that, basically on the advice on the gender roles, the gender question, the differences of the sexes and whatnot. Why is this such an important question to you, Daniel?
Well, I think it's an important question to everyone, especially in the Western world, since what we basically have seen as part of the subversive activities of the cultural Marxists during the recent decades is a war on masculinity. It's a war on traditional gender roles. Trying to create it has been an ongoing war on the nuclear family, on traditional, well, masculinity as well as femininity, I have to say, because that's basically what feminism is about. They are trying the goal of the whole ideology is, of course, to weaken the position of European men, but in the process they are also doing a huge disfavor to European women, because they are trying to make them fit into some sort of masculine template and telling them that only masculine standards are worth anything. I mean, if you're not a CEO, then you're worthless. If you're just a stay-at-home mother, you're worthless. And they're using the traditional male behavior as a template and try to get women into that kind of behavior as well. And it is, of course, especially harmful for men, but also for women. It's harmful for our society, it's harmful for our people, and we can see the results in terms of lower birth rates, in terms of widespread decadence, in terms of total gender confusion, and so forth. I mean, and broken families. It's destroying the fabric of our society, and therefore it's important for everyone, and especially for the people with the right ideas in other questions. It's important to understand this as well, because this is a topic that has not been dealt with enough, according to my experience. Because it's kind of a sensitive topic, because even many people who consider themselves like radical right-wingers or anti-immigration and stuff like that, nationalists, they tend to still subscribe to the leftist liberal worldview when it comes to gender roles.
Really? Huh.
Yeah, well, many people, that according to my experience.
Right, that's interesting, yeah.
That they at least subscribe to this false idea of that men and women are the same. I mean, apart from the obvious external differences, of course, we're fundamentally the same on the inside, which is a big lie, because we're fundamentally different, and that is a good thing, because we complement each other, and we need to get back into those traditional gender roles if we ever want to be able to form a functional society again, and if we ever want to be able to compete with the increasing number of other ethnical groups in our territories right now that we have to compete with. We really have to get our act together in terms of traditional gender roles and build the ability to construct functioning families and relationships. So therefore, I believe this is maybe the most important chapter, at least when it comes to people who are already well educated on most other topics of the right. This is probably the chapter that will give them the most new stuff to think about.
Well, exactly. And I mean, I have to mention this about the fertility rates. I mean, that's one of the major consequences of the kind of you know, feminism that we've seen on the rise in the West, in particular. I think in Sweden we have kind of a very fervent viral kind of state feminism in place, which is might differ a bit. Actually, it's more extreme again than some other countries. But a point I want to reemphasize is this idea about the fertility rates, the birth rates, how they have been going down and down and down, and how radically this have changed in just a few generations. And I looked into this the other day, and it's, I mean, in some countries, it's, we know that it's below a replacement level, which is about, you know, 2.1 children per couple. But in most countries in Europe, we have it around anywhere between 1.8 and even as low as 1.5 in some countries. And I mean, what this means, Daniel, is that we'll have a, if this continues, we'll have a society in one or two generations from now that basically is going to look radically different than it does today, due to the fact that everything that we have in place with welfare and all these, like, you know, programs and government things and just a civilization being run in a particular way, it's not going to be able to sustain itself. Now I know that they're compensating for this with immigration, right? That's one of the excuses that they have for it. But even so, it's still not enough. And even some, it's been shown that even actually some of the immigrant families that come in, they end up adopting kind of a more of a modernity style. Not everyone. There's a lot of religious people, Muslims and so forth, that come in, of course. But still, some of them adopt a lifestyle which is more Western, and consequently the birth rates drop. So it's not a cure for it, first of all, but the main point is that it's going to be radically different in probably just, you know, two generations from now. I don't think we have quite understood what this will mean, you know.
Exactly. And immigration is, of course, not a cure for a low birth rates. It's quite the opposite. It's like trying to cure a flu by injecting cyanide or something in your body. It's quite the opposite. It worsens the problem because it kills us even quicker, because it replaces us basically. I mean, if we only were suffering from low birth rates, the logical solution to that would be to reshape the culture and put some financial incentives in place that would encourage people to have more children, which is very easy, which has been done successfully in many countries before. So that's just a very poor excuse for increasing this horrible mass immigration project. We could survive perfectly well even if the birth rates stayed on the same levels for a few more decades without any immigration at all, because the immigration is not really helping saving our economy in any way. It's a
drain.
Yeah, it's a drain, and it's not like these young men of fighting age coming to Sweden, for example, with the goal of turning Sweden into an Islamic society, is going to take care of us when we are old and be nice to us. That's just a total lie.
That's why we have to be nice to them now, you see, because yes. They'll take care of us later. Yeah.
That's the way it works.
Oh boy, it's transforming so quick, you know. But yeah, but I looked into the numbers the other day, and I mean, a lot of things can change. So I'm not saying that. It's not like a kind of a, oh my God, it's all over kind of attitude I'm having here. But I just looked at the numbers as they were currently in a lot of European countries, and just try to get closer to this question of why aren't people not having kids? I mean, all these liberals and you know, social justice warriors, they're all like, you know, women are just getting older and older, and they're waiting until their 30s and later, and people are getting more and more depressed. And it's, I still don't know if it's a, some kind of consequence of modernity? If it's just leftism, is it feminism? I think obviously it's not just the one thing. It's all these things combined, but the end result absolutely catastrophic.
Absolutely, and as you were saying, as you said, it's a combination of all of these factors, of course, but it's easily reversible if you have the political will and the power to do so. You can easily reverse the trend in just one generation by changing the culture, by changing the financial incentives. There are lots of really, really easy ways to deal with this politically, if you have the will.
And what about just lifting up history again, having pride in your country and in your people? And I think the left, they don't know. It's not only that they don't know how to do this; it's that they don't want to do this because it's antithetical to the agenda that they're pushing. So it's never going to happen. And to a certain extent, it could be argued that. Well, thank God for that. That many of these, you know, people then are not having kids, because that means that their way of life, their message, if you will, their biases will not be passed. There won't be any children that will be passed down to. So it's actually, we end up in a situation where there is a lot of more conservative and traditionalist oriented people that are ending up kind of carrying the baton of civilization here, right?
Exactly, and that is. The ultimate proof of the failure, the ultimate failure of their ideology. It's an ideology of death. It's an ideology of suicide. If you're familiar with the term group evolutionary strategy, which
certainly,
that the leftist, the cultural Marxist ideology is pretty much a counter. Group evolutionary strategy. It's like a strategy to kill yourself and your own people as quickly as possible, and that is what they are doing. And I'm not sad about that fact, because even though we will be less in numbers in a few generations, the people that are having children, at least that is my hope and my intention to do my best to make sure that this will be the case, will be the ones that remain, and the ones that have big families, will be the ones with the sound and healthy ideas. So it will be the better part of and the less insane part of our peoples that will prevail when all this is over.
Well, it's I agree with you. It's not about quantity. It is about quality, and I think that's the very aspect that they believe they can just basically replace Swedes with all these other people, and that somehow they will just come in and turn to Swedes. It's somehow a magical soil theory that this just kind of converts them instantly. But that's not what we're seeing, obviously. And now it's going at such a rate that these people can't integrate into the society anyway. So quality overall is declining radically.
Absolutely. And that is another fallacy of this ideology, that people instantly become Europeans when they enter European soil, basically. Or as one exceptionally stupid politician put it recently, that if you're riding the metro in Stockholm, you're a Swede. In our view, that's basically all it takes to become a Swede, according to our current government, which is obviously not the case. I mean, a Somali will still be a Somali even after 3 or 4 generations in Sweden, if that is what it takes, and they will not change. They will not magically turn into well-functioning Swedish people.
I just want to mention, I mean, no one, I think, would argue, even on the left, that a Nigerian that was born in Japan is Japanese, right?
No. This argument basically only applies to like Western European countries, especially Sweden. These really stupid arguments because and it ties together with the the cultural Marxist lie of that there is not really even a Swedish people or a Swedish culture. If you just have a Swedish passport, it means you're Swedish, because that is all there is. I mean, that is basically what it means to be a Swede, which I suppose we will get into more later. I just, before we leave this particular chapter, I just want to add a few points.
Certainly. Yeah, I had some more things I wanted to bring up there as well, but please go ahead.
Basically, modern society, due to feminism and due to our totally dysfunctional culture, is not really teaching men how to be men, or women to be women for that matter. So what I'm trying to do in the second part of this chapter is to just give some basic advice to men as well as women, into separate sections, since I believe men and women are different, and they need to have different advice on how to behave, to be as efficient and to have as successful lives as possible. So I was basically, when I was writing this chapter, which I really enjoyed doing, because this is basically what I would have wanted to read when I was like 14 years old. And
right. Some good advice on behavior, yeah. and what roles to adopt. And yeah, because we're so confused on this in Sweden in particular, that all of this has been eroded away from us, and we don't really have those role models there to teach us these things anymore.
Exactly. On the opposite, we have role models teaching us dysfunctional behavior. I mean, teaching us the total opposite of how you should behave as a man or as a woman. I mean, just for example, take Sex and the City. That's basically the female role models that young girls grew up with, and obviously it's that is not the way it should be. And same for men. I mean, we can see a decline in the amount of sound and masculine male role models in popular culture, and we're definitely not learning how to be men or real women through our school system, which is totally ruined and worthless. So what I'm trying to do here basically is to give the people on our side an advantage over the rest of the population, those who are currently not on our side, even though most of them probably will be eventually. I want to give them a competitive advantage by giving them some sound advice on how to behave in their respective gender roles.
Yeah, because, I mean, this idea that we can attempt to believe that we can deny biology and the consequences of different levels of hormones, even the differences of the brain structure and how the brain communicates between the different parts. These are, I mean, all the studies on this stuff has been done. I mean, it's not a big secret, yet they have managed to infiltrate the sciences and convinced a lot of people that somehow these things don't matter and it has no real consequence. And so one of their kind of procedures to try to do something about this is simply to do a complete reversal. I mean, Sweden has been spearheading these things with how they promote this to the kids, of course. Remember a few years ago, we linked up a toy magazine, a product magazine, basically, for new toys coming out. And all they did, which was so amazing and progressive, was that they reversed what the kids were doing in the magazine and the pictures. So, you know, all the small little boys were running around with, you know, tiaras and pink dresses and whatnot, and the girls had, you know, water guns or stuff like that, you know. And it's just like, wait a minute, what, you're just reversing it 180 degrees and you think that this how is somehow now fixing the problem? I mean, it's absurd, absolutely absurd.
It is, and it's not working, because in the end, biology is stronger than social conditioning, and I mean, we have lots of these things going on in Sweden in kindergartens, for example, where we have gender specialists teaching, encouraging the kids to encouraging young boys to dress up in dresses and play with dolls and encourages girls to play with traditionally masculine toys. And but it doesn't work because it goes against nature completely. And at best, or I mean, according to their beliefs, the best they can hope for is to confuse these kids and maybe harm some of them for life. But it will simply not just change the generals at all, because that goes deeper than just social conditioning.
Well, you know, they speak so much about protection of the children. In fact, they speak of it so much, or they're so concerned with it, allegedly, that they have prevented, you know, parents in Sweden from homeschooling, for example. There's really politicians that have been saying that, you know, we're concerned with the biases that the parents might pass down to their own kids. You know, that's actually what they've said. So this has been a running theme of not allowing, you know, the kids to be raised by their own parents in Sweden. They're basically some kind of state asset now. But one of the things here that could be argued and pushed is that this is child abuse. The way that this is creating dysfunctional individuals on a scientific basis, I mean, that's equal to child abuse in my book, anyway.
It certainly is. And all people involved in these horrible experiments should be put on trial for child abuse, eventually.
Absolutely.
Turn things around, because what they've done to the generations they have ruined by these extreme experiments. It's hard to even grasp the damage it has done to our society, and it's criminal. They should be put to trial, and they should be sent to prison or a mental hospital. Maybe might be more suitable for these people.
Yeah. Well, you know, I can just speak for myself here, but just, you know, growing up in Sweden, certainly you have your own experiences and whatnot, but it probably took me 10 years maybe to really get to a point where I started looking into things for myself and then turning everything around of realizing what has happened, meaning I had to unlearn everything. I had to start over almost myself, and that's one of the reasons why I started the radio show, because I wanted to investigate things, come to the truth, look into the real alternatives out there, what really is happening, etc. It's a long story, but point, you know, to make that short, it led me around to where I am today, basically, when I realized that everything we've been told is largely lies. The whole education system is completely upside down and everything. I can't even imagine how things are today. I mean, it was bad enough in the late 80s and 90s when I was growing up at that stage, but today, my God, you know what these kids must not go through.
Exactly. It must be a total nightmare, and I truly feel sorry for the younger generations of Swedish people having to endure this complete insanity going on within the Swedish school system, because as you say, it was worse. It was bad enough when we went to school, and it hasn't improved. It has deteriorated quite a lot since. It's one of the biggest crimes against our people is the abuse of Swedish children through the Swedish school system, through this crazy leftist indoctrination.
Exactly. And there has to be something there to catch these people. I mean, this is what we're talking about with the book and whatnot, but obviously it extends out from there, that hopefully the kind of work that you're doing with the book will inspire other people to, you know, start YouTube channels, start making, you know, videos, maybe even comedy things and all kinds of things within that, you know, cultural framework, if you will, that shows these kids that there's another way of attracting them to this rebellious side, because that's innate in young kids and teenagers, especially that rebellious spirit. And that's, I mean, frankly, that's not being channeled right now. Everything that's, you know, quote, counterculture is just mainstream garbage, basically. So the opportunity is definitely ripe, though, for us to come in here and offer these kids something different, which goes against the grain. The trick, of course, is to how do we reach them? How do we let them know that we're here, you know?
Yeah, that's a, definitely a valid question. I think there are some outlets or some ways for young people to escape, young males especially. I mean, we have a large amount of fantasy literature that promotes sound traditional ideals, for example. We have, to some extent at least, we have video games, which are becoming worse and worse, of course, but on some level they are better than the rest of the popular culture in terms of promoting traditional ideals. I think that is important because it provides some sort of outlet, some sort of way of escaping or way of finding some sort of normal points of references for young people while in this very vulnerable state during their teens, for example, before finding themselves politically and getting around to reading books like mine, for example, and starting to read websites like our very prolific alternative media sites in Sweden.
Exactly. Now, let me ask you about something more here in terms of the contradictions within feminism, within the feminist ideology of basically denying ultimately the welfare of women in whatever country we're talking about here. You guys had a good article up on righton.net from Anne Sturzinger about, it was called "So Where Are the Feminists?", which basically broke down this aspect of the reality of the increased rape statistics in Sweden, in Germany, in many other countries as well, England, and the very aspect that the feminists actually turned a blind eye to this. They actually prefer to look in the other way. And so we have a clear contradiction here that, wait a minute, aren't these women supposed to look after the interests of women? Now they're not. How do we, in your view, explain that contradiction?
It's very easy because feminism is not about looking after the interests of women. And anyone who believes that is foolish and needs to face the facts, basically, that feminism is the reason why feminism is never bringing up the subjects of, for example, interracial rape, which is running wild throughout all the West, especially in Sweden. We have like Muslim gang rapes happening on a daily basis directed at exclusively Swedish women. The feminists stay completely silent on this matter. So they are definitely not looking out for the interests of women. What feminism ultimately is about is to weaken and ultimately destroy the European man. If you have that knowledge or analysis of feminism as an ideology, their actions suddenly make more sense.
Right, the agenda is ultimately anti-white. That's the highest pinnacle of the agenda, and therefore anything that kind of is subservient to that agenda, they're willing to play along with it, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. It's anti-white males, at least.
Exactly. Well, definitely. Exactly. But even in this case, they're anti-white women. Then, really, they down their own women. It's incredible. I mean, do you know who Lazy Green is?
No.
It's like a prominent feminist. And let me just play this clip quickly.
I am here with Lazy Green. Say hi.
Hi.
What is your opinion on what happened in Rotherham, England?
What happened in Rotherham, England?
Yeah, the big rape scandal in Rotherham.
I'm not familiar with it.
Oh, oops, sorry.
Yeah, there you go. Rotherham, you know, Lacey Green, she's this prominent, like, internet feminist, you know, she's, like, catching all these, she's basically becoming mainstream and whatnot, but she has, like, no clue what Rotherham is that happened in England, where, like, over 1,400 young white English girls were like, you know, groomed and yeah. raped and pimped out for years and years and years on end. And yet some of these prominent, you know, SJWs, they simply didn't even touch on this. I mean, this should be the, in England, it should be the story of the decade here, you know, but it's like nothing has hardly come of it. It's incredible.
Absolutely. And even if they knew about it, which I think she did, they pretend they didn't know about it because it's uncomfortable to talk about for them. It's there is a strict hierarchy within political correctness and within cultural Marxism, where white men are at the bottom, white women are almost at the bottom, and above them are all the minorities and whatnot. So if you don't respect this hierarchy, which most politically correct people do, they learn this at an early stage by conditioning and so forth, they will soon find themselves ostracized. So they are totally terrified on touching on any of these subjects that involves pointing out, for example, immigrants as rapists, like in this case.
Yeah, absolutely incredible. You know, what are some of the advice you'd give to men, for example? We can talk a couple. You have many of them listed, of course, in the book. But give us a little taste of that, if you want to, and we can talk about some of the points that you'd give. What would you say to let's say a young man growing up today with everything that's going on? What are some of the things that they could do or change in their life to adopt a more traditional attitude?
Well, first of all, I think as a young man growing up today, you have to realize your mission in life, and that is to be a defender of the family, of your girlfriend, of your country, of your entire civilization, ultimately. And as such, you have certain responsibilities. For example, you need to maintain yourself in a good physical shape. So if you're not doing this now, you should immediately start working out physically. And I'm not referring to like golf or badminton or ballet or,
you know,
something,
those faggot sports. Yeah, I got you.
but do some actual weightlifting, build some mass, and furthermore, take up some form of martial arts, preferably something that is that will put you in a position where you have to fight. I mean, for example, MMA, kickboxing, whatever, which will make you get used to violence. I mean, not just defending yourself, but also inflicting violence. You have to get used to this, because if you're not used to this, it will become a problem when you face a real life situation, which includes violence, which is inevitable if you live in the declining West. So do yourself a favor, and do your family a favor, and do your country a favor, and make sure you're able to defend yourself properly. That's my number one advice.
Yeah, it's a good advice. I mean, the hostility is on the rise, as always happens in multicultural and so-called diverse societies, unfortunately. And I mean, it's not something that I think you're absolutely right, but it's not something that, you know, maybe people will be comfortable with or want to do, but absolutely it's a responsibility at this stage if you want to be able to protect those people that you love and your family.
Exactly. I mean, it's not about becoming some sort of violent psychopath who enjoys violence. I mean, it's, as you say, it's a responsibility. It would be completely irresponsible to not being able to defend yourself and your loved ones whenever necessary. And at some point it will be necessary for many people. So be prepared for that.
Yeah.
And Secondly, make sure to free yourself from the false worldview of the left. I mean, do not even consider it as anything other than a product of insane people who want to hurt you, basically. And that is a direct quote from my book. And that's totally true. You have to really, I mean, from growing up in the West, you have a lot of ideological baggage from leftist conditioning, from school, from maybe from your parents if you were unlucky, and definitely from popular culture. And you have a lot of very stupid ideas floating around in your mind, and just try to free yourself from them and by doing proper research, by reading my book, for example, and by reading other books on this subject. There are lots of good literature and lots of good websites out there on immigration, on masculinity, and so the information is out there. So make sure to seek out these alternative sources of information that will provide you with the antidote you need to get rid of all this leftist nonsense.
Yeah.
And I can continue a little bit here in brief. Thirdly, learn some basic gentlemanly virtues.
Yeah, hasn't that disappeared from society? Especially in Sweden, I've noticed too. It's a very unfortunate. I hate to say it, but it's like the gentleman is gone from there. You know.
Yeah, and that is also, I mean, largely due to feminism. I mean, yeah. In Sweden, many women, at least in the metropolitan areas, who are more conditioned with feminist ideology, they would actually get offended if you open a door for them. In light of that, it's not really surprising that the gentle manly virtues are disappearing. But
they don't know how to. This is the problem, right? They don't know how to. I mean, basically the man's role here is to adapt to the female, right? I mean, the there's a whole, you know, biological reason for this, of course, but it's due to the fact that, you know, women have very sporadic chances at getting pregnant, right, for reproduction. The male has a lot of ability to do so at many times for a long period in its life, which means that the woman is the one who can be choosy in this situation, which means that the male then who seeks this on a biological level will try to adapt to whatever he needs to do, basically, to get the female, right? So that's a basic fundamental component that drives society. And so if these basic fundamental roles can be upset like they are now, and the man doesn't know how to react or act within that, it's just going to be confusion galore. And I think that's why we're seeing what we're doing right now, where, as you say, the women can be angry at something like this. So the males would immediately drop that kind of behavior. I mean, it's a very clinical, scientific way of looking at it, but I think there's some truth to that, we still operate on these very fundamental, basic principles, you know?
Absolutely. That's true. But on a deeper instinctual level, women still react positively. I mean,
I think so. Yeah.
Sane women react positively to these kind of behaviors. So by not falling for this social conditioning going on and making sure to learn some basic gentlemanly virtues, you will give yourself a massive competitive advantage over other lesser. Which is basically modern men, feminized men, which will be to your advantage in the process of natural selection, and which I would like you to have. I want you who are listening to this to have all advantages possible, because we want the people on our side to prevail. So, yeah, just forget about all of this feminist, leftist rubbish and learn some traditional manly virtues, and you will soon notice that it will be to your advantage.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's many more. Of course, we want to urge people to, you know, to pick up a copy of the book to go through them all. But before we take a break, give us a couple advice for women, and then we can start talking a bit more about where to get the book and whatnot after that.
Absolutely. Yeah, the recommendations for women are of course vastly different because men and women are different. But the most important point I want to stress here is, as a woman in modern society, I can understand the temptation of falling for this cultural conditioning that we have been subjected to, and you want to focus on building a career because you have been taught that that is what's most important in life. But that's a lie. I mean, you need to get your priorities straight. When you get older, you will understand this, but then it will be too late. In your autumn years, having a successful career behind you will be nothing compared to having a large family with grandchildren and everything else that comes with it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And this is also the best and most natural method for ensuring your retirement benefits. I mean, a few decades from now, your children and grandchildren will be far more inclined to take care of you than the rapidly crumbling European welfare states. So
absolutely, yeah.
And besides, passing your genes on is a far worthier goal in life than slaving for some multinational corporation, which will forget all about you the second you retire.
I don't understand it. I don't understand how the most important task of human civilization, of survival, of all of us is somehow something that has been denigrated and brought. I mean, we see it in the movies all the time. I can't tell you how many movies I've seen where they put down child rearing and as this horrible thing, and they're unhappy and whatnot. But as we know, it's the complete opposite. You know, those who have larger families, have been shown, they have far more pleasurable lives, and women who hold off and maybe then later in their life not have kids at all. That's, as you explained, extremely, a tough choice to deal with at that stage. And you might not have felt like it when you were 25 or whatnot, because there never is going to be an optimal time to do it. It's never a good time for having a kid, I think, but it's just one of these things that has to be done. But yeah, just this aspect, they've managed to denigrate this, you know, highest of tasks basically that women have, to something lesser than. It's amazing, isn't it?
It is. And I would actually say the opposite. I mean, there's never a bad time to have a kid, because it's your most important mission in life. I mean, careers and educations and everything is something that you can do whenever, but having kids is something that is limited to a very specific period in your life. If you want to have the maximum opportunity to have healthy kids, at least, and if you want to have more than one or two, so start early, and if you really need that, you have to get an education and start off a career, do that later. I mean, prioritize correctly, basically.
Exactly. Well, you know, it's a planning issue. It's kind of what they show in the beginning of Idiocracy that they make fun of. If you ever saw that, they're this IQ couple, and they're sitting around waiting for the ideal time, and they're waiting for the economy to improve. And it's like, forget all that. It's not going to happen. It's not going to be that optimum time. It's going to be, as you say, you know, whenever you can do it, as soon as possible, that's the best time, you know.
Exactly. And by the way, that is one of my absolute favorite movies, because it really pinpoints the one of the major problems in modern society, in modern Western society, especially.
Exactly.
Just briefly, remaining advice for females. I'll just do two brief ones.
Sure.
Here.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Secondly, I think it's very important for women to understand and recognize the value of your personal honor. I mean, yeah, everyone knows that we had this thing called the sexual revolution, which was a leftist subversive revolution aimed at harming our society. It's never to a woman's advantage to sleep around. You should postpone that until you find the right one. It will be the most advantageous choice for you, because that is what actually makes it possible for healthy relationships to grow. I mean, for people to fall in love, so forth. Postponing sex, basically. Even if it's natural for men to try to push for it, early on, as a woman, you should always try to hold off for a while, at least until you manage to nurture the feelings that are necessary to form a healthy relationship. And
nothing good has come of the kind of debauchery and whatnot that we're seeing, and the kind of that type of just sexual promiscuity. It's one of these factors that actually makes people really depressed, and there's diseases involved and all kinds of negative consequences.
And also it's quite psychologically harmful for females, especially.
Exactly.
Females are not really psychologically adapted for that kind of sexual behavior. Men are more resilient, and for men it's more natural. But many women actually take quite a big emotional damage from living that kind of lifestyle, and it often shows later in their lives. So and finally, maybe most importantly, the advice I would like to stress for women is to really nurture your femininity. And realize that your feminine qualities are your greatest assets, because many of the modern women believe that they are raising their status by adopting male behaviors, but that's not true. They are doing themselves a huge disfavor by behaving that way. They should really use their feminine qualities, because that is what will give them the best advantages in the natural selection process, and making them more attractive to high quality males.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of a side related issue here, but someone else pointed out that the kind of xenophilia that we are seeing right now, this cuddling of the other, could be a consequence of many women actually in positions of power within European countries, of basically they don't have their own children, and many women have this desire to mother something or someone, but instead then of doing this with their own children, they have this propensity to try to invite others, basically kind of a way to exercise their motherly needs, but do it towards someone else than their own children, basically, and that could be one of the reasons why they're pushing, immigration so much, for example, or, all these refugee children and stuff like this, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're definitely more susceptible to that kind of emotional propaganda because of their need to nurture someone, and when lacking children, I mean, refugees will be a substitute. Sadly enough.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the first hour has just flown by. We have a lot of other things we want to try to get to here in the second hour, and we'll have that lined up very soon. But let's talk a bit more about some of the websites, Donnelly. I want you to give out some of the details again. Arctos, of course, and tell us where people can go to pick up a copy of the book and everything else you have going on right now.
Of course. My English, as well as Swedish edition of my book, is available on through many venues. It's available in hardback, soft cover, and also as a Kindle ebook edition through Amazon.com, through pretty much all major book retailers and online, and on arctos.com, of course, our own website. So check it out there. And I also want to remind all of you to pay our new website, writeon.net, a visit, because we have a lot of quality material there. Even though we recently launched, we already have a lot of high quality writers on board, and more will come during the coming weeks, and you will see an increase in updates and so forth. So please keep visiting writeon.net and follow us on Facebook and so forth to keep updated.
Hey, by the way, I know we have something upcoming as well in November in Stockholm. Tell us about the event.
Sure. We have a yearly conference in Sweden called Identitarian Ideas, where we invite speakers from all over the world. It will be a very nice event with many different speakers. The keynote speaker is none other than Guillaume Fay, the famous French New Right author, author of many of our best-selling books, for example, RQ Futurism. And actually, I will hold a small speech myself there as well as many other people. We have some more information about this at the Multiple website, and I think you will find a link to that article in the information. But in short, it will take place on November 7th, Saturday. It will start at 1 p.m. and go on until 2 a.m. basically. It will be lots of fun. So the tickets, make sure to get tickets beforehand, because we usually sell out pretty fast, and we have a limited number of tickets. So make sure to visit arctos.com to get your tickets in good time before the event, to make sure you won't miss it.
Absolutely. We'll have links up to the event as well, folks. You can just click through easily from our website and find more details about it. Sounds like a really fun and interesting time, so definitely do check it out if you want to attend. Again, the title of the book, The Real Right Returns, A Handbook for the True Opposition. And do pick up a copy if you want to read more about the book. A lot of good things in there. Arctos.com. We'll have the links up to that, and also to the Kindle edition on Amazon, and also writeon.net. All right, well, thank you so much for the first segment, Daniel. Stay with us. Stay with us, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back with the second hour coming up. RedIceMembers.com is the website where you can go to sign up for a membership with us. We have 3 months, up to 2 years available, or you can do a 3-month recurring subscription as well. That's the way that you can catch the rest of this show and also get access to all our previous shows in full, over 1,000 programs, plus videos, films, and a whole lot more, all the way back to 2006 since our start. In the second hour, we'll speak more about Russia's entry into Syria and the consequent reaction by the Zio-infested, APAC-driven foreign policy of the American Empire and NATO, backed by most European misleaders. We'll also talk about some of the latest developments in Sweden, with a focus on the recent talk that a government official did in Sweden to the government, trying to do some damage control on the migration invasion that's now getting some backlash. And of course, trying to claim that no native Swedish culture exists. So we'll break this down in more detail. But it's yet another addition to the already pretty prominent lineup of outspoken Europhobes that are in our countries, actively working to destroy our people and our cultures. Fanatical anti-Germanic maniacs that seems too willing to turn themselves into objects of real deep-seated hatred, which is an absolutely natural and proper response. You should be mad. Use that anger constructively. Okay, but much more on that coming up in the second hour, so don't miss it. RedIceMembers.com. Please join us. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be right back.